From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a deeper look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today, On Deadline is breaking down the incredibly complex and frustrating housing market and asking this question: are Americans finally about to get some relief? The current housing market has been a perfect storm of both high prices and skyrocketing interest rates. It's one of the main points driving inflation and fostering a perception that the otherwise solid economy is floundering. The housing situation was sparked by a number of factors, including shortages brought by the pandemic, supply chain issues for those trying to build homes, and inflation that led the Federal Reserve Bank to raise interest rates. But there are some positives popping up. Compared to a year ago, the number of new listings jumped by nearly 15%, the largest annual gain since May of 2021, according to new data from the real estate site Redfin. Another positive includes a recent settlement that will disrupt the current home buying and selling model by making it no longer necessary for sellers to pay both their broker and a buyer's broker. Critics of the previous model and those who sued the National Association of Realtors said that it was responsible for driving housing prices artificially higher so that brokers could make more money off sales. Jill Schlesinger of CBS joined Odyssey to share more on what could potentially be a seismic shift in real estate this summer.
There's going to be, it seems, a seismic shift in the real estate world after a settlement was just reached. What's the first thing we need to know about this?
Well, this is settling a case that was determined in Missouri, where the National Association of Realtors and a couple of other large real estate brokerage firms were accused of conspiring to keep home sale commissions artificially high. And this really goes back to the way realtors are paid, which is out of the price of the home that's sold, right? So if you sell a house, then there's a 5 or 6% commission. It is split between the buyer's agent and the seller's agent. And at the time, by the way, this was a almost $1.8 billion penalty, massive. So when we hear $418 million in the settlement, it's a fraction of what the National Association of Realtors was set to buy. So what is at the core of this? The core is the way that the NAR was conducting business. It was accused of basically making people pay for both the broker, both brokers out of the sales price, which didn't seem fair to the seller. So the seller sued. It was a really interesting case because, you know, this is the structure that's been in real estate forever. So with the settlement starting in July, now the buyers will be able to negotiate directly with their own agents. Sellers will negotiate with their agents, and every house that is sold is going to be able to get listed. There's not going to be a play to pay kind of thing where if you want to be on MLS, the multiple listing service, you have to agree to our commission structure. We're stripping it away, and now both sides will pay their agents on their own.
So it opens up the MLS for anybody, or do you still have to get an agent just on your terms to be on the MLS?
Well, that, I don't think that that has actually been determined. I think what's going to happen is that MLS, the reason why I said pay to play, that if you wanted to put your home through the MLS portal, you had to agree to the commission structure that existed. That's no longer the case. So I think what's going to happen is you still have to have access to MLS. The question is whether that fee will be much lower. And I think that that fee is the part of it. Here's the real issue at stake. There are many people saying that if you look at the $100 billion a year in real estate commissions that are generated in the United States, $100 billion, gang, that's a lot. There's likely to be some reduction in that, because if I'm a buyer, I don't even need an agent. I could just buy it myself. I can go on my own. Now I finally have a way to do it on my own. Or maybe I'm going to talk to a big real estate technology firm that says, oh, we'll generate all the documents you need. Here's our purchase and sales agreement. Go bid on your own. And that'll be a 1% fee. So someone's going to collect the extra money. It's not going to be the agents anymore. And the question really becomes, will the price of homes go down because of this? I don't think so. I'm going to say that. I know a lot of people believe that. I don't think so. I don't think there's going to be enough money at stake that's going to see like, oh yeah, now I'm a buyer, and I'm going to lower my bid and I'm going to pay my person directly, and then the seller is going to have to accept that. I think that when you look at a median home price that is sold in the United States, $417,000, let's look at what the commission is on that. It's about $25,000. If you lop off a third of that, it's $8,000. I don't think that sellers right now, because there's no inventory in the market, are going to really do that. I think they're going to say, great, I'll have that money. Thank you very much. Not the broker.
Do you think that realtors are going to end up undercutting one another?
I think what's going to be, I think that's where the action is in this story, which is the real estate industry itself. Now, last year when this case was going on, the National Association of Realtors said they had 1.5 million people who were realtors, 1.5 million people. And by some estimates, if you're getting, let's just say that a good chunk of those people, because of the way real estate works, maybe they're doing it as a side hustle. A good chunk of those people might be like, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to make enough money. Now, if that's the case, I think that's the interesting part. Like, where are those people going? And maybe instead of realtors making $60,000 or $70,000 a year, maybe some of them say, well, for $40,000 a year, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to go do something else. So I think there's going to be a really interesting shakeup in the industry. I think there should be more. I think there are going to be more choices for buyers. Look, a real estate transaction is very complicated. You guys have been through it. So sometimes it's nice to have somebody. The question is what you have to pay for that somebody. You know, we've seen technical disruption in everything from creation of wills to people being able to like do their own divorce decrees online. These are big legal transactions. I'm not saying you don't need representation, but maybe the cost of that representation is going to drop.
The housing crisis is hitting Americans hard. The United States is short millions of housing units. Half of all renters are paying more than a third of their salary for housing costs, and those who are looking to buy can't afford a typical house. Currently, U.S. Census Bureau data shows that the median price for a home in the United States is $417,000, while the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics shows the median salary is just north of $46,000. With an 8% interest rate, the biggest loan you could get with that salary is $146,000. With a 20% down payment, the most house you could afford is $182,000, according to personalfinanceblogs.com. Now, that's less than half the price of an average house. Compare that to a decade ago, when just over $275,000 was the average price of a home, and just over $35,000 was the average salary. And you'll see the American dream of home ownership is slipping further away from the grasp of many people. What can be done to fix this? An assistant professor of business law at the Stephen M. Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan joined Odyssey to suggest some solutions.
So you recently participated in a housing ideas showcase in Washington, D.C. in order to share a proposal that you collaborated on to help ease the housing crisis. What are some of the challenges facing lawmakers and agencies when it comes to creating more housing?
Yeah, so at the federal level, there are a lot of challenges. Our federal government doesn't build housing. It participates in funding for some housing and provides tax credits for affordable housing. But housing is certainly a major issue around the country. And so some of the challenges that the federal government faces is we have high interest rates that are making new development of housing challenging in the current market. We're still seeing elevated construction costs, you know, still some supply chain issues stemming from the COVID pandemic, but also labor shortages in the construction market. And then also, and I think this sort of goes to some of what was discussed at the Housing Ideas Showcase, is that there's relatively little land available in many of our major metropolitan areas for new housing development. And that's due in significant part to local zoning restrictions, but also other laws as well that are passed by state and local governments.
So your idea was among many of the winners of a Housing Ideas Challenge, a way to track data. Tell us about that, about your idea specifically.
I partnered with an organization, Root Policy Research, which is in Denver, Colorado. It's a housing economics research firm, and we proposed housing production dashboard. So basically an online system to track housing production across the country. And really what we wanted to do was bring some data to bear. In many parts of the country, it's virtually impossible to track new housing construction. If you are a citizen of a community, you have no way of knowing how many new housing units are proposed in your community, how many have been approved by your local government, how many have actually been constructed. So what we proposed was to basically take that idea and create a national dashboard that would allow us to track that information, as well as track, are the housing units affordable housing units? Are they high-end housing units? And then in particular, for housing units that are proposed but aren't ultimately constructed, we were trying to understand why that is, whether it's market conditions or zoning rules. And so having a dashboard like this would certainly help with that. And I would add that California has actually been a leader in the country in that regard. Your state has a housing production dashboard that is managed at the state level and allows people in and outside of California to track new housing proposals and whether that housing actually comes to fruition. Ours would add a little bit more to that, but there's already a good model in California, but there really isn't one anywhere else.
The economy has been listed as a top problem by Americans for most of the last 4 years, with inflation and interest rate hikes plaguing our wallets. Here's a bright spot at the end of the tunnel. While Fed Chair Jerome Powell has yet to announce any rate cuts, it appears the days of repeated interest rate hikes are behind us for now. Dr. David Kelly, the Chief Global Strategist for J.P. Morgan Asset Management, joined Odyssey to share what we can expect in the near future.
So what do you see in the latest inflation numbers? Is that the key to what the Fed's likely to do and the reflection of the economy that we need to see?
Well, it is. And it's kind of like my wife is a very good baker. But when she makes cookies and she takes them out of the oven, it takes them forever to cool. And so inflation is cooling. It's just cooling very slowly. I think that's what's really going on beneath the surface here. There were certain special factors which pushed up the numbers in February. And what happened with markets is they looked at the headline number, it was a little hot. Then they looked at the special factor and said, oh, well, that's all just airline fares and tobacco prices. And you take that out, inflation's still heading down. And I think it is. I think so long as inflation is slowly heading down, I think the Federal Reserve will be able to begin cutting interest rates starting in June.
Is there any precedent for what we're going through right now? There's no precedent for a pandemic, but a bazooka just sort of injecting all this money into the economy and then trying to slowly pull it back and using quantitative easing and trying to figure out what's next. Do the history books tell us anything?
History can be very misleading on this because the economy evolves over time. And what's happened really is over the years, the economy it's actually become less cyclical. If you know what I mean. I mean, it's not, we don't overheat that much, and then we don't, but then also monetary policy raising interest rates doesn't seem to push us into recession either. So we've sort of moved beyond the business cycle in a way to a situation where, yeah, we could have a recession, but it's going to have to be caused by some shock because what's going on right now, the economy is just going to trudge along at about 2% growth with inflation coming down to 2%. And it is different from history. I mean, this economy is not as prone to inflation, but it's also not as prone to recession. And so I suppose in a way it's kind of grown up and monitor and policymakers ought to back off a bit and just let the economy do its own thing.
One thing is for certain. The economy is going to play a major role in the next election. While a poll from USA Today and Suffolk University found that Americans are growing less pessimistic about the economy, they're still not happy with how President Joe Biden has handled it during his time in office. That has many pundits saying that Donald Trump, the former president, could keep his current lead over Biden in the polls and eventually win the election. So what does Biden have to do to engineer some kind of win in the housing market that would help him fend off Trump? At the root of this problem, according to experts, is that America failed to build enough homes for its growing population over the previous few decades. The bottom line is we have to build, 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 Biden said last week in a speech to the National League of Cities. That's how we bring down housing costs for good. This show is produced by Joe Heady, Christy Strouser, and Myron Kaplan. I'm Lauren Barry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.